It's Sunday, and you're listening to Draycott Diaries, recorded by me, Tiki Trethowan. However, I'm going to be joined by my friend Elaine Tucker today. Both of us used to work at the BBC together, and entirely by coincidence, we live in the same village. Now, next door to Elaine lives Colonel Darren Denning, who is married to Katie, and they have three children. And as far as I know, Darren has been in the military, he's in the army, for 20 years. There are so many questions I'd like to ask him, and I know Elaine is fascinated as well. She's baking biscuits, so I'm harnessing up Jackie, my guide dog, and I'm just about to go out the door, make my way down. I'm really interested today. I think we're going to find out some nice, insightful things.
Do we salute you?
No, not at all. Come on in. Where
okay. We're in civvies. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Darren. How are you?
Good.
And since this is our pilot and you are our very, very first contributor, we thought we'd bring you biscuits as a way of thanking you. Now, we've got coffee on the table and biscuits, so I think while we're just going to serve, we're going to have a little pause, aren't we?
Yeah, so we'll tell you a little bit about what we're going to do today.
We were telling you our idea, and you were gracious enough to look interested. As you know,
he just looked bemused, to be honest.
He did look bemused, but I'm trying to be serious. So, Elaine and I want to get behind where people go in their Ford Fiestas at anywhere between 7 and 8 o'clock in the morning. So, we know, from the little we know of you, because I've seen you in the post office in your fatigues, and many years ago I was a babysitter to your children, who are almost fully grown now. One of them, I believe, is going to join us later and give us some his idea of his dad's work.
Be very afraid.
What happens? How long does your journey take? Do you go in your car? And when you arrive there, and we want you to be, even if you go straight to the loo, we want to know what you do for your first 30 minutes when you walk in your door. Gosh. And then we'd like to tell you the entire contents of the Secrets Act. In that order.
So okay. What do I do?
Well, first of all, where do you drive to?
I drive to London.
I thought you went to Aldershot. I don't know why.
No, on Monday morning, I drive to Northwood headquarters, which is near Watford, northwest London.
And how long does that take?
It takes me about 2.5 to 3/4 hours.
You don't go on your bike, I'm
sorry. No, well, I do in the summer.
Okay.
But not in the winter, it's far too cold.
So I think your 7 to 8 in the morning set-off time's a little bit out in Darren's case.
Yeah, what time do you go?
I'm lucky, so I make a rule of having breakfast here with the kids.
Because
I work away.
You're out, but not in the way I thought. He can do what he likes. He makes the rule. Yeah.
Almost. Yeah. I leave here about 7:30, and that gets me into the office 10:15.
Okay.
And that's fine because I work away from all week, so I work late in the evenings, most evenings, because I make up the difference, because you'll notice that I get back home about 4 o'clock on Friday afternoon.
We do. We are monitoring all your moves.
Exactly. Oh. So, and that way I beat the traffic and I get home and I have a full weekend rather than bits of one.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. So when you get there, when you open that door on that Monday morning, oh, goodness me, I've forgotten everything. Because I don't know about you, on a Friday, I think I've got live tape. What happens in 2 days, I don't know, but by the Monday, I start learning my life all over again. So you walk into the door of your office near Watford.
Yep, in Northwood headquarters.
And you've got your own office, I'm assuming.
No, I don't.
Oh,
fortunately.
Are we talking open plan?
Yeah.
Not desk hopping.
No, we don't desk hop. I do have my own desk, but at the moment I work in an open plan office.
Okay.
Which is...
With other people in uniform?
Yes.
Okay.
But there's about 35 to 40 of us in this open plan floor.
And so who are the people?
Oh, it's a joint organisation. That means it's made up of personnel from the Army, Navy and Air Force.
Oh, is it? Okay.
It's almost all officers.
Okay.
And I'm kind of middle-ish.
Well, you're not even the boss.
I'm not the boss. Later.
I'm leaving now. Yeah, I'm sorry. I feel like I've been missold
I'm moving
entirely.
The biscuit tray.
Not the boss right
now. People more important than you.
There are. I do have a small team. But there's a number of small teams. And I work to some more senior people. Okay. Yeah, there's always somebody more senior in the military.
Yeah, yeah. It's always in life. Yeah.
So it's a very interesting working environment. There's lots of different experience and different types of people from different parts of the military. So I enjoyed that.
So you've walked in the
door.
I walked
in the office and I make a cup of coffee.
Oh, yeah. You do.
And then go straight to the loo. At 10:15, lots of people are already there.
Yes. So you get those that don't work late in the evening because they live nearby. Okay. So they walk in on a normal working day and they're already up and running.
What would that be? I mean, are there normal working hours in the military?
It's a pretty grown-up place to work. So it's generally 8 till 5:30for most, unless there's something important on. But that's the point. We're not at war.
Oh, we aren't.
So we need to remember that so that we don't... So we've got an extra gear when we are at war.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So this is just normal working business.
But you see, that to you, that's normal working business. To us as lay people, what to you is a normal working business day?
Mm-hmm. Well, it depends what I'm working on. So at the moment, I am I'm leading all the post reporting for a very large exercise. And you remember last year, I went away to Oman for five or six weeks.
Yeah, you were away.
So that big exercise was called Safe Sharia.
Okay.
And we were out there in the desert. There's about 5,500 British forces out there.
Wow.
And what I did was capture all the observations from that exercise. So what do we learn? So I'm in
when
the business
now. When you say capture, we use IT.
So we have some special applications that allow us to capture observations, or we write them down, or we record them.
Mm-hmm.
So we get all those observations from across the whole of that force.
Mm-hmm.
And my job now is to turn that all into a report that will go to the chief of the defence staff, so the big boss.
Okay. Yeah.
Can you give an example? What sort of work, what kind of things were they doing, or was that secret?
What were we doing there?
Yeah.
No, it's not secret at all. It was a big...
We'll get there in the end.
It was a big defence engagement exercise. So really, it was about demonstrating a commitment to Oman. They've long been friends of the United Kingdom in that part of the world.
Okay.
There is a base there that we look to grow and use for our own forces.
Mm-hmm.
So we can go and exercise there and we can deploy in there should we need to. Mm-hmm. It's important in that part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're doing day to day was, soldiers, sailors and airmen working alongside Omani soldiers, sailors and airmen.
Oh, okay.
Exercising together, practicing war.
And are you involved at the level, because obviously, you've worked long and hard for many, many years, so you are quite up. But, I mean, are you still on the ground? Do you still have to do exercises with the guys? Do you still go around shouting at guys and girls?
I don't do so much that anymore, no. So
you're there with your technological clipboard.
Yeah, I try not to be a clipboard monkey.
Are you an iPad man?
Yeah, well, we try not to look like that.
Okay.
No, so I probably stopped running around digging holes, jumping up and down about 5 or so years.
Do they still expect you to have a fitness level?
Absolutely.
Do you still have to regularly have...
Yeah, I have a twice annual assessment to make sure I'm fit enough.
You still dig plenty of holes in the garden. And
I can still swing a pick. So.
Yeah, we've been watching. So when you're out in Oman and you were out there for how many weeks?
I think it's 5-6 weeks.
Okay.
5 or 6 weeks.
Do you find in the military? I've had small experience of this doing some survival programs for television. Mm. So I've worked quite a lot with guys in the military who I have to say spend a disproportionate amount of time talking about their knives. I don't know why. Really difficult to get them to go to work, but there we go. I don't know what all that's about. And my knife is bigger than your knife. Is it hard going, into the military world and then coming back to, for example, into Draycott, which is, your
really
classic.
Hard. Yeah, really hard.
Is it?
Yeah, really hard.
For both family and you?
I think so. So we decided to move here.
Yeah, why did you come
in 2012?
To
because we had 5 houses in 6 years in 3 different countries. And that was just a period of my career that was like that. It can happen. Katie, bless her, we got married. We had our own home in Kent.
Did you?
In Worcester, in Kent. And then we went straight to Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had Joshua, and then we went to...
Do you have any choice in that? Or does some person phone you up on a Wednesday afternoon and go, right, you're off?
Yeah,
to
you have some choice. So you can apply to... We have a personnel centre in Glasgow and say, look, I'd like to go and work here. And what they do is they balance the needs of the military, of the army, against the needs of the individual. And they'll always always try and get you what you want, but they can't always make that work.
Okay.
I've been lucky. I think I've pretty much got what I wanted most of the time. So
just rather a lot of it in quick succession. And
dragging poor Katie around with me. So I say we won't.
In a succession of pregnancies, I'm assuming.
Yeah. So Katie was always moving house and always pregnant.
Always. It goes for the territory, doesn't it? Always happens. You're about to give birth and you're moving at the same time.
Yeah. And
an excessive amount of nesting having to be done.
And I always acknowledge that. So I've always, for me in the military, I go from one familiar environment to another familiar environment. Within a couple of days. It's a familiar place.
Mm.
For Katie, it was always, right, this is our new home. If you can have me a circle of friends and have us placed in the community by five, that would be great.
Mm. Oh, my goodness.
Always a hard task. You know, it's tiring and plus little ones hanging off her.
So why Draycott? Why did you come to Draycott?
I was born just over the hill.
Oh, were you?
So I'm a Radstock boy.
That. I don't think I knew that. Yeah. I have met your mum, but
you can't tell from my accent. It's a little bit.
I can't even see you, so I haven't.
It's a little bit there.
A little bit.
Yeah, so I grew up just over the side of the Mendips, and I made a point of driving Katie around here. I always liked her. I used to love coming over the hill.
Yes.
We used to go to Western Supermare as a kid.
Beautiful.
And I used to love it over here. And I used to ride my motorcycle as a tearaway teenager up on the top, and we used to come down into Cheddar. And I knew this part of the world reasonably well. The roads are great if you're a motorcycle lunatic.
Yeah.
So I said to Katie, well, you know, this is nice around. She said, it is. And then she thought, do you know what? We could live there. And I said, yes, we could. So we started house hunting. So that was in 2012. We were living in London. So we had weekend after weekend after weekend with the kids.
With children in tow, yeah.
Little children then coming down. They were so patient. Coming down, looking at houses, kissing a lot of frogs, going back again, and coming back and going back.
How far afield were the frogs?
All around here, really. I would say within 5 or so miles of Draycott. That was where we knew we wanted to live.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, I remember I was selling my house at the time you were looking. Do you remember?
That's right. We had looked at your house.
These two reprobates have broken through the barriers. And I found them at my back door.
You did.
And
you
I was
did.
Rather primly said, yes, can I help you? And that sort of get off my land. Passive aggressive.
They said, I wouldn't want to live here.
Yeah, I think they ran, actually. But I looked at that and I knew you were in the military. And I think I said to you, are you in the military?
You
said, God, does it show? And I said, no, I'm afraid I work with people like you. But we have to drag it back.
Yeah.
And drag it back to the military. I'm quite interested. I'd like to revisit this thing about, you were saying, this readjustment. Because I felt this, funnily enough, even with filming, it's like that. I think it's because I'm not saying the military, but certainly television, you kind of get to play, really. It's La La Land. And then you come back to what I'm calling real life.
Mm.
And there is a real adjustment. And I think that's right. And Dan, does that just settle back? Is it just a time thing? Does it take a few days? Or
I think it depends on what you've been doing. Okay. So,
have you in the past? Have you seen some grim stuff?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So yes. In many ways, it was harder for Katie than it was for me. So, I mean, multiple tours to Afghanistan and Iraq, Kosovo, lots of overseas stuff. So 2010 was particularly difficult. We were in Afghanistan then. We had a lot of people killed on that tour.
Your comrades?
We lost as a battle group. So I was the second in command of the battle group. So that's about 1,000 people. We were in a town called Sangin in northern Helmand. I think we lost about 25 across a battle group. And that's hard when you're there and you're living it and you're trying to get through that tour. But it was really hard for the wives back home. So, and it was the classic, is it going to be? And that was wearing, I think. That was really hard on Katie, really hard. You know, and I wasn't out and about much. So as far as being in harm's way, I was in less danger than a lot of people. But yeah, it's still worry. Yeah, there's still worry. And you know, she knows people. We have friends that lost their husbands on that tour. Adjusting from that was hard.
Mm.
For me, it's probably the hardest. Hard for me. I probably didn't notice it so much at the time. But I was really tired. And coming back to normality, whatever that was hard. It's never been harder than that. But there's always adjustment. So it doesn't matter where you go, there's always adjustment. The kids move on a bit. There's something different every time.
And is the... I mean, I was funny enough, during the the commemorations recently for both the First and Second World War, it seemed we lived, you know, look back at history then, and people were getting knocks on the doors, and it didn't seem they were so advanced in those days with mental health issues, and, you know, it just seemed you had to be British and get on with it, you know, your family's been your son or your husband. There must have been millions of people walking around with post-traumatic stress. Do you think that's better handled now?
Yeah, absolutely.
And for families as well?
I think so. A lot of the problem is identifying it, but if you seek it, there's lots of support there now. The trick is the chain of command, the circle of friends and family within the military community, identifying when people need it, because often the people that need it most don't know it.
Because presumably as a team leader as well, that sort of pastoral role, that is actually part of your job, is spotting the signs and delivering that, and you've got to, you're carrying that as well as your own worries about
Of course. And I suppose I think leaders probably don't pay themselves enough attention when they're looking after others.
And also going right back to the other end, when people are going into the military, what is it attracting a type of person who likes a regimented life, therefore when come out at a reasonably young age, because obviously there's the fitness level, it is hard of that readjustment? Does that make any sense? Does it attract people who like conformity, is what I'm saying?
I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
I was a commanding officer of the Army Training Centre at Pembright, so I did that for 3 years. So I trained what we call Phase 1 soldiers, so that is their absolutely initial basic training. Mm.
Was that officers or was that all levels?
Soldiers, not officers. Officers go to Sandhurst. So this is at Pembright. And my experience there is that people join for a multitude of reasons. Some are trying to get away from something. Some are attracted to the physical aspects of service life. Some like the thought of discipline and routine. Some like to wear a uniform. Don't discount operations, wars, and the recruiting sergeant it was for us. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is maybe slightly misguided, but there is that glamour of going away to other countries and fighting. So I think the reasons for joining the army are many.
You have two young sons, gorgeous, gorgeous, two beautiful boys. In fact, your children are like golden angels.
They are.
I'm not sure in their behaviour, but certainly
24/7.
Yeah, I was going to say slightly different. If Austin or Josh came to you and said, "Dad, we want to join up, we want to go into military," how would you feel?
Or Gracie?
All Gracie.
Yes. Very, very poor. I stand corrected. I absolutely
can now join
corrected.
Combat arms as well.
I was only thinking she's just walking, so I was thinking maybe a little
you
bit.
You haven't seen her for a while.
No, that's true. I haven't actually. No, I haven't.
Yeah, she's 9.
Is she? No, I haven't. When I was babysitting, she was just a lovely little girl, that little golden thing.
She was 2.
Apologies. Anyway, if any of your children came to you and said, "Yes, Dad, we want to."
Well, Katie and I have talked about this lots. I have never actively encouraged them to join the military.
Okay.
I've never actively discouraged them from joining the military. So I am slightly biased. I am conscious of what it's given me as a career, what it's provided for us. I think if they were to come and genuinely ask my advice, I'd probably give it as unbiased as I possibly can. And the advantage is I know all the pitfalls too. I know what's wrong with the military. I'm not sure Katie would be the same. because a lot of things that whilst Katie recognises that, you know, this has given us a standard of living, she's also lived through me not being here and those periods of worry.
Sure.
And
so to go through it again with your offspring as well as your partner.
I absolutely understand that. Mm-hmm. So if they were hard over, yes, but I'd encourage them to do it with their eyes wide open, and I'd try and tell them as much as I could. It's a good life. It's got its hard bits, but it's a good life. You know, on balance, I've really enjoyed my coming on 25 years in the army, so you know, I wouldn't swap it.
And it's sad because we're losing you from the village for a few months because you're going for a posting in Norway, is
for a few
right?
months. Yeah, 36
36 months.
Yeah, 3 years,
but you're not leaving Draycott, are
no,
you?
We're
keeping,
you're keeping
your footprint firm.
Yeah, we want to come back.
Good.
And isn't it interesting that 6 years ago Katie had enough of moving house?
Yes.
And then we come to this point, do you know what, actually, and it's the point in our children, in terms of certainly the eldest's education, if we don't do it now, we won't.
Yeah, yeah. No, for sure.
This gives us a chance.
And it's different moving house when you have a base, you might be moving away, but you're not completely nomadic in the same way as when you don't.
Yeah.
Dan, we spoke earlier about people's motivations for joining the military. I don't think yours was a particularly normal routine, from my understanding. Can you just explain a bit about what your routine was and what your motivation was at the time?
Well, I was a cadet as a kid, so I always had an interest in the military. But I was an air cadet. I wasn't an army cadet.
Oh, you were an air cadet.
Yeah, so I used to, as a child, I used to come down and I used to do gliding at RAF Locking. And I was always going to be a fighter pilot.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I was going to be. I was going to be a fighter pilot.
You would have got more biscuits.
I would have got more biscuits.
Tiggy's got a bit of a yen for fighter pilots.
Yeah, I'm sorry, it's just one of my many weak spots.
I get it. Unfortunately, it was a bit dim, to be honest.
Fighter pilots are dim?
I was a bit dim. I was a bit lazy at school. I didn't do as well at A-levels as I should have done. I didn't get that science or maths-based A-level, which would have enabled me to go off and be a fighter pilot. So I went off to university. I studied English, and at the end of that, I thought, what am I going to do with myself? And I thought, I always liked the stuff in uniform. Mm-hmm. I'll have a look at the army. So I did, and I was lucky enough to get through the officer selection at Westbury, which is just over by Warminster.
Where is that?
Westbury.
Oh, okay.
Just over by Warminster.
What sort of thing did that entail?
It's a lot of interviewing, a bit of fitness, command tasks, putting you in leadership situations, writing. It just put you under a bit of pressure for a couple of days and see how you respond and see if you've got what they think it takes to be an army officer. And I think it's largely as it was then. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a bit more science in it now. But I couldn't go straight away, so they said, no, well, you can come, but you've got to wait. We haven't got any spaces. So I did
just because they didn't have space, wasn't it?
So I did a postgrad certificate in education in Yorkshire.
How come they didn't have any spaces? I thought they were always crying out.
But we had more recruits back then.
Oh, I see. Gosh, it really has slid off.
Yeah. Right. So is it struggling for recruits now?
Recruiting's
at all levels?
Officer less so than soldiers, but yeah, it's hard.
Do you know why?
If I could give you the perfect answer, they'd pay me a lot more, I think.
Why are people joining sliding?
We entered into a contract with a company called Capita a few years back to help us with our recruiting. Mm-hmm. And Capita came on board with this online solution, which is logical, everything's moving online. Mm-hmm. And I think the Army saw an opportunity to reduce what it was doing in its recruiting offices.
Mm-hmm.
And I think between what Capita were offering and what the Army was removing, it became, we didn't realise what we'd hoped to realise. So recruiting took a dip. The online stuff didn't backfill what we were doing on high streets.
Okay.
We also were coming out of Afghanistan, remember what I said about, what a recruiting sergeant operations are. We were making people redundant at the time. Right. So we were bringing our size of the army down, which is sending a message. And I think we underestimate the influence sometimes of what we call gatekeepers, so parents influencing people in young people's lives and what they might have to say about a life in the military.
Yeah.
And if all they've seen is operations, which not the whole of public society agrees with. Not many people agree with what we did in Iraq. Not many people agree with what we did in Afghanistan. That's not the soldiers' fault. That's a political decision. But that stops people from wanting to encourage their children or nephews or nieces to join the military. Oh, so I think all that combined, means that recruiting is really hard right now. Really hard.
So Joshua has just joined us now. Josh, you are the oldest of three of Darren's children, is that right? And how old are you now, Josh?
12.
And you've been very good. I believe you've been burying your head in your books in the other room, is that right?
No, homework, math.
Oh, okay.
Still very good.
Right, so still very, very good. Now, we were just talking to your dad about his career in the military. And one of the questions we asked him is, have any of you shown any interest? And have you ever thought about it? Or are you interested in it? Or is it just something your dad goes off on a daily basis?
Not really, no. No, I'm not too interested in that sort of thing. I just don't like... I just didn't like the idea of war and that sort of thing.
No, why? Well, who wouldn't?
Yeah. What's the best and the worst of your dad being in the army for a job?
Pays the family well.
it keeps you away for a week.
That's the worst thing. He has to go away for a
week. I wasn't sure whether that was the best thing or the worst thing. Let's be clear about this. That's the worst thing.
Is that difficult when he goes away?
It's like hard to get all the jobs done with us all here without dad.
So obviously you help a lot to get it all done.
And how is it when he comes home? Is it a bit weird for a few days, or is it?
Well, he only comes back for 2 days a week, so.
Yeah. Well, it's nice because he's around more at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah.
And what are your thoughts about Norway?
Oh, great. I love the snow.
Excellent.
And I'd like to go fishing a lot more.
Nice.
Just fishing your thing
about that.
Well, yeah, I love it, but I haven't got to do it that much. I think I've only been twice. Yes. Once I caught a massive trench around the size of my arm.
So wow. What's that? A couple of feet. What's that in metric?
2 to 3 feet, something like that. Yeah. Another time we went round to farms, we were fishing in a pond and everyone caught tons of sunfish, and I caught a mirror carp and some other things I can't remember though, really.
Nice work. Oh, so lovely. Lots of fishing in Norway.
I was going to say, you're going to keep us in fish for a long time.
How close is our house to the water?
Around, let's say, a mile?
A couple of hundred metres.
Yeah, 100 metres. Wow. Walk through the woods, there's a cliff there that we can walk down to the beach.
Oh. It's a tough life.
Lovely. And do you know where you're going to go to school then?
The international school of Stavanger.
Oh, fantastic. Has that got a good reputation?
Yeah. Very good.
And what are you looking forward to there?
Let's see. Well, there's a lot of physical education because you get to go outside a lot. And there's quite a few courses, running pitches, football areas and everything.
Fantastic. It's going to be so interesting.
Well, we're going to miss you, Josh. We're not seeing you whizzing around the village doing hectic things. Will you miss Jacob while you're away?
Yeah. It's quite nice to be able to walk around and know where everything goes and that. It'll be quite unfamiliar area over there.
Only for a short time, though.
3 years.
Yeah. 3 years and you'll
get used to it. Yeah. I was just wondering, you mentioned some of the difficult times out in Afghanistan, but I just wondered, are there any particular things that give you a real buzz or particular times that you're really proud or happy about that was your favourite? You could say were your favourite bits of your work.
I think time when you are when you're in command, when it's your team, are the best times. So I look right back to being, a young platoon commander.
Yeah.
Arriving in Cyprus and having my own platoon, so that's 30 men for the first time. Yeah. I mean, that's an enormous responsibility and makes you feel incredibly proud and fulfilled. I mean, coming out of Sandhurst with my family there, my parents there.
Oh, yeah.
Marching off the parade square there, that's incredible. Yeah, so I think those occasions, we like to dress up, don't we? We all like to dress up.
So. Well, lame, certainly.
I know the officer ball is a bit of a nice dressing up occasion too. So you get that some of the perks.
Exactly, and it's nice to peacock once in a while, I suppose. You don't get so much of that.
A favourite peacocking moment?
I was what's called the captain of the Queen's Guard. So I changed the guard at Buckingham Palace
nine
times.
Oh, wow.
So, you see them on the forecourt in front of Buckingham Palace. Yeah. So, yeah, that was my show with my company back in.
So what were you physically actually doing? Did you choreograph it?
Yeah, well, you're the officer commanding. So I think there was about 80 words of command you've got to remember. It's very, very rehearsed. And the Queen knows what she's looking at. Mm. So you've got to get it right.
So you met the Queen at that?
I didn't meet the Queen, no. I've never met the Queen.
You've never met the Queen?
Wow. Elaine. There's an ambition then.
I've met the Duke of Edinburgh and I've met a lot of other royals. I've had dinner with Prince Edward in Afghanistan and met lots of royals.
Harry?
I haven't met Harry. But no, I've never met
the Queen. Actually, talking about hobnobbing with the rich and famous, I understand that the you know, you get to some ambassador receptions. Have you got any you'd like to tell us about?
Well, what was very nice when I was in command at Purbright is I would get this invitation to the US ambassador's residence in London, which is enormous. And he would bring in the likes of the Foo Fighters.
Imagine having the Foo Fighters playing at your house party.
Big rock bands would come in and play in the garden. So you'd be there. I mean, there was probably about 1,000 people. So it's not a small little soiree. I mean, it's a proper do, but great fun. And to get invitations, Katie and I go off and hobnobbing properly.
Very nice.
In the mosh pit with Princesses Eugenie and Beatrice. Great fun. Absolutely great fun. Yeah. So I've had loads, actually, looking back at it, I've had loads of highlights.
That sounds absolutely brilliant.
It's been a great career.
Actually, I have one last question.
Oh.
I'd love to know, when you're wearing all your service medals, especially at Remembrance Service, what are all those medals?
Well,
which ones, and how do you know which ones to wear on which...
You always wear the same ones.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Yeah. So there's a variety there. So some of them are for going away, say to Afghanistan, I think, and Iraq and the Balkans and Northern Ireland. I have a medal for being away lots and lots and lots. They give you a medal for that.
Yes.
It's called the Accumulated Campaign Service Medal. I have one of those. I have a medal for being good and long service.
It's like getting gold. It's like gold stars. It's tall, isn't it? It's like the equivalent of a sticker.
And I also have medals for the Queen's Golden and Diamond Jubilee, which all the military and policemen and firemen as well were given at those times.
But without being frivolous, can you, when you're going to a ceremony, can you look at them and go, oh, that might go quite well on, you know?
Or I don't think that colour of that ribbon actually goes with the jacket.
I just pin them on. I just pin them on and go.
Do you see Katie looking askance with her
artistic eye? Yeah, my God, that ribbon is a total clash with my dress. Sorry,
love. You see, I would do that. I'd say, I'm wearing this. I don't know.
Luckily for you, Tiggy, you don't have any medals yet.
No, I don't get to pick and choose.
No, but I just thought I'd ask that because it's always been a worry.
Darren, thank you very much. It's been really nice. There are still a couple of biscuits on the table, so we can gobble up and leave you to enjoy the rest of your day.
But thank you so much, and thanks really for your honesty, because I'm sure there's some difficult stuff gone on in the past. So and again, this is the thing which I was so interested in, is that I think everybody, you know, has challenges, good and bad, and you just don't know in a village, because we just go, sail on with our lives, don't we, get our Sunday papers and everything. So, Darren, thank you.
You're most welcome.
And it was lovely that Josh could come in at the end.
Yes.
You've been listening to Draycott Diaries, recorded by me, Tiggy Trethowan and Elaine Tucker, edited by Rob Elliott, and the music arrangement by Hugh Trethowan.